All right, shit shows. Breathe to Heal is officially back, and this time we're going deeper than ever before. The theme of this third round is release and receive, releasing everything that's been stuck for way too long so you can finally receive the peace, love, and safety I know you've been craving. The 7-week healing journey goes beyond talk therapy by working directly with your nervous system using breathwork, somatic practices, and parts work to give you the kind of healing your body has been waiting for. This is all facilitated by fellow shit show member and certified somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, who's just added some fresh breathwork certifications to her toolkit. And the best part of all, this all happens right within the shit show healing community. So think of it like a healing journey where you can show up exactly as you are, like you're hanging out with your friends on the couch in your pajamas, instead of feeling like you're in some stuffy environment. So this all kicks off on Tuesday, January 13th, and early bird pricing is on through December 11th. So you, yes you, the person that's been wanting to sign up for the past two rounds but hasn't, how about we do the damn thing already, okay? Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is breathe with an E at the end. adultchildpodcast.com/BREATHE to heal to learn more and grab your damn spot. Well, welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have an original Breathe to Healer who became a shit show lifer. I think we got you, Tabitha.
Yeah.
Got you.
We did.
How long had you been listening to the podcast before you signed up for the course?
I started listening I want to say it was 22. And
How'd you find it?
I found it by, I had only just found the phrase adult child from therapist, and I started just like Googling adult child, and I had searched adult child many times before and I always came up with grown kids, like the opposite, a parent with a grown child that's not right, as opposed to the other way around. And I was like, what is this? And so I didn't find anything for a long time, but then I was like, I just typed it in and found your podcast. And so started listening. And I was just like, tickled pink about, you know, the shit show and the shit show. I love
the cursing.
I loved all the cursing. Cause it's just like, whether you should or shouldn't do it, I cannot stop myself. It's just these words are very appropriate at times. And so there we are. So that's why, that's how I found you. And then through the course of therapy, I got into regular therapy and then into some IFS and then starting to realize the somatic thing. And when I saw the Breathe to Heal, I was like, oh, this could really help me connect a bridge. And it really did. It made a huge difference. And I mean, even before getting on here with you, I was doing 448, to a calm little Zen state. And so that was just really helpful. And it's so great to be a part of a group that people get it. People are working on it and the different stages of where we each are in our healing journey. And for the longest time, it's been like, I told my story a million times over, but nobody ever taught me what to do after and like how to go ahead and live. And that's where ACA came in. It was like, this is a guide on how to try to live a somewhat normal life or a less, what's the word? Less, a more manageable life.
Yeah. I don't know about normal, but
it's not, yeah, not a more manageable life. And there was never any, I never had any literature before that helped with that. So that's why I really like it. Cause I'm like, this is great. I told my story. Now what? I'm not healed. Mm-hmm. I don't feel better. So now
I'm more traumatized from telling it.
In a lot of cases. Absolutely.
Well, it's been great having you. So what song do you want played when you walk into a room?
Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Oh, I love that.
Oh yeah. It's good
choice. Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time. Having a good time. carbohydrate.
Potatoes.
How?
Any way you make them.
I mean, come on, you got to give me one. If you one kind of potato, what would you have?
Well, my favorite in my world that I can actually control is I have a recipe for a smoked Gouda au gratin. And so you do smoked gouda, caramelized onions, cream, and a ton of butter, and then bake it. So that's my very, very favorite because it's great warm, and then it's great, in the 2 or 3 days after.
Yeah, after it settles. It's always better the next days, I think.
I love like good French fries. I like tater tots. Love hash browns. I just any potato in
Any
just
kind of
about any
potato.
format. It's all
Are you
good.
gonna say smoked gouda for your cheese?
I am. You guessed
I
it.
love a, I'm a smoked gouda gal myself. And condiment.
I'm gonna probably go with ranch.
How do you feel about condiments, Tabitha?
In general, they, well, ranch is often like the food is the vehicle to eat the ranch, because that's how much I like it. But in general, they're okay. I grew up like my dad was always like, no ketchup. We're purists. We eat French fries plain. And so I like them that way too, but I also enjoy ketchup sometimes. So I don't know. I don't
You
have a
know
favorite.
what's really good ranch is it's the you get it in the refrigerated section at the grocery store. It's like I don't know if it's like Marzetti, but it's like the tub that it like comes for like to dip your vegetables in. It's a nice thick ranch. Like that shit's really good.
And how I do mine, because like the regular ranches nowadays, they don't taste right. So I do sour cream in the packet
The
of powder,
powder.
and I mix my own, and I like it thick. So that's how I do it when I have it.
Love those ranch mixes. You can do a lot of stuff with those little seasoning things.
Also like a good garlic aioli. It's
I like
another
it
one.
all. I like all the condiments. So you kind of teased us, but how did you find out that you were an adult child?
I found out, I mean, the actual term, back in 2020, I took a job that took me from Oklahoma to Oregon. And I'd been in Oklahoma my whole life and for 45 years or whatever. And so went out there and I started working at this new place. And I had this boss that was like kind of a jerk. And it just, I started slowly, or actually rather quickly, started losing my mind. And I didn't know what was wrong. I just knew I'm crazy. I feel crazy. Everything, nothing's right. I'm on tenterhooks, scared to death of everything, like classic kind of PTSD stuff. And I at the same time at like at night, I'm like sneak eating, and like just things that I don't had not been doing for many years started happening. And then it dawned on me that it's the boss. And I started to see somehow that he's acting exactly the way my mother did growing up. And so I went back to therapy and I found this fantastic little therapist. I'm so sad she didn't do telemedicine or I would still be seeing her. But she introduced me to ACA and she had bought the Loving Parent guidebook. And we were looking at some of the little cartoons that are in the front part of the book. And that's where the phrase came. And she gave me the book, which was so nice. And then I took that with me to North Carolina. And that's when I started going to ACA meetings in 22 and then led to you. But that boss just, I went off the rails.
So, what were some of his behaviors?
What weren't there?
I mean, was it like angry yelling or just
There was
unpredictability or?
a lot of unpredictability, a lot of yelling, extremely sexist, like women suck, you're just trash, which my mom wasn't, well, whatever with mom, but and like the yelling, the inconsistency, I didn't know what I was going to get. And it would be, you need to do this. And I would do it. And then it was like, no, that's not right. It was a consistent, you need to do this. I do it exactly like he said. And then, no, it's not right. And it was like, I'm losing my mind over this. And so I started in February of that year. I quit in October and took about a month off and then went and got a different job for a
Had you ever
year.
had a job before where you had a boss that was reminiscent of a parent?
Nope.
No.
No. And the thing with my mom, I went no contact with her in like 13 years ago, so 9 or 10 years. I thought I'd had enough time and enough therapy when I after going no contact with mom that I didn't think that anyone else remotely like her existed. I kind of lived in this bubble that, you know, I'm really unique. I've no nobody else has
Has a mom
experienced.
like this?
Yeah, I'm the only one with a mom like this. And I had no idea. And I did meet some girls later that had moms that were kind of similar. And then I ran into him and I was like, oh my God, I was not expecting it to happen again. Like, and I had had enough therapy. I was in a really good place. Certainly not completely healed, but I was functioning really well and rocking along and all that. And then that hit and it was just like the sky fell, I guess.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about going no contact, but let's first go back to the beginning.
The beginning.
So, paint the picture. Do you have siblings?
I do not. I'm an only child. I do now have step siblings, but I got them when I was a teenager, so it's kind of irrelevant to the Genesis story. But my parents were married close to 10 years before I came along because mom wasn't supposed to be able to get pregnant. She had like fibroids and stuff. And so there she is. Here I am. And my mom is bipolar, was, I'm sorry, she was bipolar and borderline personality disorder. And we didn't know, like back then, they didn't know what those were. Like they didn't have those diagnoses really entirely. So it was a lot of just go to a psychiatrist and get medicine, and she may or may not take it or whatever. And my grandparents, her parents took care of her and basically did everything for her in the long run, where she didn't learn how to function very well in life, I guess. And but at the same time, my grandmother, her mother was exactly the same. So my grandma was probably a worse abuser than my mother to me, because there was way more physical abuse and like, well, the both of them had a mind fuck thing going for sure. But my grandma was really bad. And so like same and same. And like nothing echoes more to how generational this is than looking at this. And I have done the best I can to find information about like how did my grandma grow up? What on earth caused this? And I know why my mom ended up kind of how she was because what she grew up with. So I didn't know that. I took it as a kid, it was just people are mean. People are mean all the time. People are always mean to me. That's kind of how I rode with that. And mama was always very a lot of times really sad. She stayed in bed a whole lot. And her and dad would fight every day for 5 years, scream and yell at each other when he was leaving to go to work. And it was get up, do something, you know. And then after that, there was 5 years where they didn't even speak to each other. It was like their own groceries, their own meals, their own. So there's just like this root and the brakes hit, whatever they hit their breaking point with each other. And when I was 10, mom, she said that she was scared of dad, and we left. We ran and hid out at some lady's house. And so dad didn't know where I was for quite a few days. And he came to the school and found me. And we cried because I was like, I don't know where you're at. So they got the divorce. Mama fought for full custody, and she drug my dad through the mud. And she got me, and then she had me for 9 months and could not work with it. And I was stressed to the max. I was having like head to toe hives. It was just really, really terrible. And she called dad one day and was like, I gotta send her back. And of course, he was furious. There was lots of screaming and yelling, and that was really traumatic for me to hear because what I heard was is I don't want her back. And so then I'm like, mom doesn't want me, dad doesn't want me. Now what? And I did go back with him, and I was scared for a little while, you know, because like I look like her. I probably have some of her mannerisms, and what does that look like? So I was always like super concerned about making sure that everyone around me is happy, because then I'll be okay. And that's the training that mom gave. I was definitely parentified from a very early age. And then also it was like, I'm 10 years old and dad's like, well, here's the washing machine. You put the soap in and wash it. And so there was a lot of stuff I had to learn to do early also. And then I had 5 years with my dad that were really, really good. And I'm at a point in therapy where I'm able to explore that and kind of let that love back in that I blocked. We had 5 great years roughly. And then he got remarried, and they did a horrible job integrating our two families. Horrible. And that at that point, then I was like, oh, well, I already lost mom. I couldn't count on her, through all that, because she was, I would go back and say too about mom is that she'd disappear for months and months and months on end. Nobody would know where she was. And it she'd be like in a behavioral med unit somewhere. And so like you just didn't know where she was or what she was doing. There'd be tons of times where she wouldn't, like I didn't have to go for visits, and then she'd call my dad and say, you're bringing her right now or I'm calling the cops, and we'd have to run. And daddy tried to make sure I didn't have to go if I didn't want to. Like, so it was a, I'm sure it was a tightrope for him, but he got remarried. And I got a stepsister 3 months older than me, and they tried to integrate, and they just really did a horrible job, because she had been with her mother for 5 years roughly, because her father had died. So they had been alone. We'd each been alone with our respective parent long enough to have something that was really, like, for each of us, I think, special and calm and predictable and all the things that I didn't have when I was with mom. And then now there's this new woman and rules and, are you supposed to call her mom? There's no way and all that stuff. So like I just shut down, put a huge wall up. That's it. I absolutely at that point cannot count on anybody. It's up to me. And so when I say like now I can look back and let some of that love in from that time, that's the wall. It's more like a screen door now. We just discovered this, I mean, not 2 weeks ago. So, and my dad's still married to the same lady, and that's fine. But I'm, well, after about a year of living with them, I moved back in with my mom, even after all the crazy. And so I finished my senior year up with her in high school, and she was never home because she was doing like dog grooming in another town. So she was gone most of the time. Or whatever. So I was pretty much on my own through all that. And I got a job and paid for my car and did the bought my own groceries and cooked my own food. And I've been cooking my own food since I was little. So, that's just kind of where it led. And I met my husband somewhere along there. And I was still in a relationship with my mom. And I would just, yeah, I was in high school, almost graduated. And I'd be panicked about her being mad about something, and he would just say, "You know what? She'll get over it." And I'm like, "What? That's not how does this work?" And I tested it a few times, and she did kind of, and and then we got married 3 years later, and we've been married for 20, I don't know, it's close to 30 years, 28 years. It's been a long time. A long time. It feels like many lifetimes we've lived in that time frame. And
Well, can I want to go back to I have a question.
yes, go
So,
back.
do you know if your mom's mental health got worse when she became a mom?
I do not know the answer to that. I have talked with my aunt, her sister, extensively, because my aunt and I are like sisters because we both had the same mother. Like the same kind of mother. So we've talked a lot, and she said that mama was different from the beginning. Like there was always something not consistent or not right, or she was sad a lot. It sure doesn't help. I'm 90% sure she was the scapegoat and definitely the identified patient. My grandmother was, and the legacy is still there of turning each child. They had three, so I have an aunt and an uncle and my mom. Those three are constantly or were nipping at each other, and grandma would pit one against the other, and there'd be all this triangulation that would go on. It's a pretty kind of vicious dog eat dog world. And then compound that with growing up in my grandparents were farmers, and the only thing that matters is boys. And so when my uncle came along, that, and then the girls are, of course, like, we're just chopped liver or whatever. So that didn't help either. And I even saw that in my cousins. The boys were always like revered and didn't seem to get in any trouble. Grandma's rule was, if you're the oldest cousin, it does whatever the little ones did, you're the one getting beat for it. It was, and so generally I was the oldest cousin present. So that happened a lot. It's like my little cousin would do something stupid, and then I'm the one getting the crap for it.
Blame for it. Were your dad's parents around at all?
They were very much around, and for all intents and purposes, very wonderful people. Both school teachers. I think there's a lot of religious issues there. In there, I grew up in a church that I consider cultish, so dad was a product of that. So there's a lot of like rigidity, and how you look as a unit to the outside world is very important. The only thing that matters is service. You have to work and earn your way to heaven and all that stuff. So there's a lot of rigidity around my dad's side. And my dad had white knight syndrome. He thought he could save my mother. Her parents told him, don't do this. That's another part that I've uncovered since, not from him, because he's a, we don't talk about it. So he had white knight syndrome and thought he could save her, and but in fact couldn't. And then as I aged into adulthood, I'd lost track with mom a while, or we would, like I said, she, you didn't know consistently, is she going to show up or not? And then you don't know what you're going to get when she does show up. And then at a point, I started helping her with her medical stuff, because I was in the medical field at the time, and so I can speak the language and help navigate.
When you say medical, do you mean like medical stuff or like mental health stuff?
Mostly just medical. So like going to, the doctor for this blood test, that kind of thing. And at a point, my grandma, the mean grandma, she pulled me in to the house, and she gave me this big giant brick of money. And she said, this is for your mother. You cannot tell her you have it. And it's to take care of her, and we're done doing things for her. And I'm like, okay. So I set up a trust fund, and I never told mom about the money. And I used the money. I had to travel a lot because I lived 2 hours from her. And so at the time, she was doing electroshock therapy. And so I'd have to drive and pick her up. And then we stayed in a hotel because we had to be at the hospital so early the next morning. So I just paid for all of that stuff with that money. And when she needed, like when we moved her from where she was to where I lived, I paid for the move. I paid to get, and just used all, I used all that money on her legit, but she would have spent it in 3 weeks straight. She, like the money just ran. I don't know how she managed to lose so much money all the time.
Was the electroshock therapy helpful at all?
No, not at
No.
all. I don't think. And she, of course, had been to, she wore through psychiatrists. She didn't do much therapy because I don't know why she didn't. She started out going to a psychiatrist, and that's just always where she went. And that, in all of the times that I've been in the psychiatrist office with her, it's always just, what meds are you taking? And she would say, I feel like I'm jumping out of my skin, because she knew that's what would get her Ativan. So it started to be a drug issue. And then we'd get the Ativan, and which is like it's supposed to be for emergency uses only, and she'd get the 30-day supply and it'd be gone in 5 days.
It's so addictive too.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I spilled it. Or, you know, and you're like, I know better than this. So we went through a lot of that. I helped her do her meds. We did a med box, and I would over the phone and, you know, keep track. And I had researched all the meds. By that point, I was getting pretty fluent in, you know, what
Psych
the
meds.
And that kind of thing. And she got a boyfriend, and then they started sharing medicine. It was just kind of one thing after another. And then she would do things like act like the one time she was like, I'm not doing this pill box anymore. I'm not doing this. And I ran up there 2 hours, mind you. And she is acting completely off the rails because she hasn't been taking her medicine. And so I get her in to her doctor, and we go in, and she acted so normal. I was insanely mad. Like I don't think I've ever been that mad in my life. And I was like, I drove her home and just kicked her out. And then I got to a parking lot and just screamed and screamed and screamed. And I called a friend and screamed some more. And like that was the beginning of the end of my relationship with her. And I got her moved to my hometown to better be able to manage her, because by this point I'm paying her bills. I'm, you know, I this has completely taken over my life. I don't if I had not owned been a part an owner in my own business, I would have lost any job I had. There's no way I could have done all of this. And I got her into a program that is they manage the medicines. They take them to group every day. They do therapy for her, they do therapy for me, and they did therapy for us together.
Wow.
It was called PACT Team, PACT. And they did for schizophrenics and bipolars. And so I got her in, and they started rolling. And we were doing the therapy joint, the therapy apart.
How did that go?
That went great for me.
How was she in therapy when you guys did therapy together?
she's not great. It didn't go well. It was always a fight in the end. And they realized as they had her, the director called me in one day, and I was like, I lived in fear of her getting kicked out of this place because it was giving me some respite from the everyday crap. And she called me in, and she goes, we pretty much have got the borderline personality disorder diagnosis. She goes, we don't treat that. And I'm like, oh God, they are going to kick her out. But that she said, you know, she does have bipolar. She's in on that. So we're not going to kick her out of the program. And I was like, oh, thank God. And we kept doing the therapy, and it just kept getting like, it wasn't better. And they were teaching me how to draw boundaries. You can't call me 90 times a day. I'm going to take your call at 4 o'clock, and that's it. And she got worse because that's what happens when you do boundaries. And so they at that program, they were like, okay, it's clear, and we were talking in therapy that way, that it's clear that I cannot be in her life and function normally or have any kind of like happiness, or because I'm an
So
indentured servant.
consumed, you're consumed.
I am so enmeshed and so upside down in this situation. So they helped me go no contact with her. And we sat in the little conference room at their office, and I had written a letter because by then I had been in Codependence Anonymous. So I had found out the word, what codependent meant, and went, oh shit, I can fix myself. What? I'm not subject to the rules of the outside world in a way. I can do this inside. So I had been doing that, and I wanted to be able, before I walked out, to make some amends for the enabling that I had done. You know, like I could see, oh geez, you know, I didn't help in this at all. But I was also raised with, you know, she can't function without you. You know, and we sat in that room, and I read my letter, and she sat there, and it was like no big deal. And then she said, I do not feel like I can live if I am not punishing her. And I was just like, oh, that makes perfect sense because that's what's been happening. for all these years.
Does anyone really know what hormones do? Like, there's so much talk around women's hormonal health, but most women are left even more confused about what it means for them and what the hell to do about that. So, shit shows, let's leave this confusion behind as we head into the holiday season, shall we? Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Perfect for enjoying the holidays and heading into the new year energized. And Happy Mammoth, the company that produces Hormone Harmony, is famous for its zero compromise policy. No GMOs, artificial fillers or flavor or any other junk. Only science-backed ingredients in amounts that are clinically proven. So this holiday season, give yourself or the woman in your life the gift of wellness. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That is happymammoth.com, code adultchild for 15% off today. All right, shit shows, the holidays are here. And if you still have names on your list, if you have gifts that you still need to buy, what the heck are you doing? Okay, because I've been telling you about Uncommon Goods for the past 2 months, who make holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You will discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. They look for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade. And they have something for everyone, for mom, dad, kids, teens, book lovers, sports fans, foodies, you name it, they got it. Listen to what I just stumbled upon. I just stumbled upon a crochet your own emotional support desk plant kit, a DIY kit for you to be able to crochet an emotional support desk plant. There's got to be somebody out there that has a crocheter in their life that needs this emotional support desk plant. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. And so to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/adultchild. That's uncommongoods.com/adultchild for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
So I went no contact, and I made it.
Did she try to contact you?
She did sometimes. She also would sneaky back and go contact my husband.
Would she like show up at your house?
Well, within 2 months of going no contact, she had a suicide attempt, and that landed her in state hospital. And so then from there, she went to an inpatient facility, and then where she could stay for a while. And then we got her. In this time frame, I'm still doing stuff in the background. I'm still paying her bills. I'm still her power of attorney, medical. I got all that stuff done because you can't do anything without it. Mm-hmm. I'm still all of these things, and I'm paying the bills and making sure, you know, and then it's like the nursing home would contact me, not her, or the nursing facility, whatever. So I got her in a place that was back 2 hours away, so she couldn't come visit me. Though I lived in absolute terror that it would happen. And at some point she got kind of settled down for herself and managed, like, for someone who's completely
nuts,
she got my power of attorney revoked.
Wow.
And she didn't have a stitch of money. I have no idea how she managed it, but she did it, and I took it. And I was like, okay, that's fine with me. So I filed it with the county courthouse, and I was like, that's it. Nothing else. And so really after that, there was no, absolutely no contact. She would sometimes write letters and say, send me pictures of your dogs, and just trying to suck herself back in a little bit. But I made it there. There's a ton of grief in it. It was 13 years. She died this March, just a couple days from my birthday. And the reaction that I had totally knocked me out. I had no idea I was gonna go like be as sad as I was. And it hit home that I had grown up thinking that I had one job. My one job was to fix her, and I didn't do it. And I had felt that the whole 13 years that I was not in contact with her. I didn't fix her. I that's all that she ever asked me to do was make it better for her, and I didn't do it. So I'm like a total failure. And like in from the IFS perspective, the kids inside, they did not understand the no contact thing. She's still alive. Why isn't there, like, it could still happen. I had nightmares for 10 years of meeting up with her again. And as therapy got better, I started having dreams about like turning her into the cops. And then now I don't have those dreams anymore. So it's crazy. If you have nightmares about that, it will get better. I know it will. And so, crap, I think I lost my train of thought.
I can really relate to that, just like with the like always thinking that my mom would eventually get sober because she like loved me enough.
Yeah. Yes. And I had that over and over with her. Like when I was 12 years old and she told me about a suicide attempt, and I was like, you don't love me enough to stay alive. And so there's something I can do to fix that. There has to be something I can do to fix that. It's my job to fix. It's my job to support. It's my job to take care. Do. And then once she died, the parts that were didn't understand the no contact understand death. And it's like, oh. And that's when like shit for me really started to change between IFS. Well, I'd been doing IFS for about a year, and then also in conjunction with regular therapy, including a lot of EMDR and that kind of thing, which those two to me, for me, go really well together. Nice little partners. And we hit the wall in IFS of it was my only job is to fix her, and I didn't. And now all is lost because she's dead. And that was like one of those devastating things that, I just had to grieve through in essence. And then we kept working on it, and with the IFS and with the EMDR, I was able at some point to just, I don't say just, it took a lot of, but there's always a scene in my mind in my old childhood room, and I'm there and my mom's there. And at some point in IFS, we evicted my mother and sent her to parenting school. And that's great. But in this case, recently, it was, we're in the room together and we are together. We are each other because I was so enmeshed. And it came around where, wait, there's separation. And my therapist that I do EMDR with, she was like, I don't know if it's occurred to you, but your mom walked in to the room dysregulated, and she brought her shit and she put it on you. And then it was like with the EMDR, I was able to see the separation between the two of us. And then it was just like, oh, it's not my fault at all. Like that part of me started to understand. And so since, gosh, probably June, like the freedom and the joy and the crazy, it's like we've hit such a big old breakthrough. And I'm not terrified the way I used to be. And I'm not like, well, I mean, I still am learning, of course, but the rigidity that I used to carry myself with, and the automatically thinking everything's my fault, and being afraid. I'm still afraid of arguing with people about their opinions and things, but for the most part, a lot of it just like cracked that open. And I'm in the same boat with my dad, because it's like when he got remarried, I felt like I can't possibly share him. And if I was a better daughter, he wouldn't have wanted to get married, and he wouldn't have left me, because once he remarried, it was like everything stopped. Everything that we did together on a regular basis completely stopped. And so it's like now there's the two abandonments. And so I'm working on that and trying to find ways now, because my relationship with him is very salvageable. I think it can come back. It's never going to be the same, but it can come back to something that makes us both a little happier, I think. Like, I don't have to be as closed off. I can let the love in, let the love out. The love is still there regardless of what happened. And I couldn't see that for a really long time.
Have you ever expressed to him? No.
No. And then, now there's been lots of talk on that over the last 3 years. Like, I started out with this burn letter, just wanting to burn him to the ground. Do you know what my mom did to me? Do you know? Were you even aware when all this stuff was happening? Why did you guys send me to my grandmother's when you knew full well that she was abusive? You know, like all of that stuff. And then I've managed to like work my way through that anger some and come back around to, I can say that all I want, but it's not going to do anything. It's not going to change the relationship. But what I can do is come back now and be like, okay, I can talk more. I can reach out more. He's also very avoidant in the same way. We're low contact. And that it could change. But if he's afraid that I'm mad at him, you know, I recognize that like something has to be said. And I'm still like working on how to say that. Yeah. And having the nerve, the not nerve, just not being terrified to say it. I'm scared to death to talk about it. I don't know if I'm afraid of what he'll say, or I'm afraid of what I'll say, or I don't know. There's still a lot. We're still working on that. And I've spent the last 20 years that I've been in therapy has been all about my mother. And it's only just now that we've started to talk about stuff with
With
dad.
your dad. Yeah,
Yeah.
because the safer parent, quote unquote.
Safe parent. 100%. 100%.
Well, I was going to ask you, so like when the stuff happened with your boss and that came up, like you obviously started, was therapy when you did that pact thing with your mom, was that the first time that you ever did therapy?
I did therapy for maybe a couple of years before, because I was dealing with her, and I knew like I was, when I look back now, okay, I had started therapy and it was just plain old talk therapy, like what's IFS? I don't even know if it was existed then. Surely it had, but there just wasn't. I mean, I'm in rural Oklahoma. There's not a lot of resources available, so I just went to a regular talk therapist and we talked about stuff. And we talked and talked, and it's like, well, I've told it all, and you know, I don't know what now. And it helped some, but I still had all of the like the traits from ACA. So many of those traits were playing out in my everyday life. I was just like in that time frame, and while I was dealing with mom, I was like randomly blowing up on people, and I'm sure like passive aggressive to no end. My poor husband is so trained to the heavy sigh, because my mom did it to me, so I did it to him. And it's really, when you start to wake up out of that, it's like, oh crap, I really hate that I acted like that, and I know I couldn't do any better, and I do better now. And when I sigh now, I'm like, oh, this is contentment, I'm just telling you. Or you know, this isn't anger, like I say what it is. So I've come a long way in that regard. But
Well, I was curious if like had did you view your childhood as having experienced trauma, or did that not really come until you started working with the therapist after the situation with your boss?
I knew younger that I didn't know like to call it trauma. I knew I was being physically abused by my grandmother. I had been physically abused by my mother. So like I knew that, and that was you don't tell. My mom broke my pinky once, and I can remember being in the parking lot of the doctor's office, and she's like, "You're not going to say how this happened. We're not telling anybody." So like I knew that you weren't not supposed to talk about it, and I knew that everybody was mean. Like, why was my mom mean? Why is my grandma mean? Why are teachers mean to me? Like, and so like the word mean doesn't sound like much, but my definition of mean is being hit. Like it was kind of warped. So like the real trauma, I did not know. And we went, me and my therapist in Oregon. She took the DSM out and we looked at PTSD and she read it and we were like, wow, that's it. And of course, we know it's complex PTSD because PTSD, because I literally had death by a thousand cuts. My mom did this stuff to me every single day for my entire life. And so even though it's not in the DSM, it still exists, it's still real to me. I know what I experienced. And then I'd have those weird moments. I've heard this shared in so many rooms where I like say something that I think is funny, and everybody around me is like, "Oh, that's horrible."
Yeah,
You know, it's like,
exactly.
"Oh, oops, I didn't know." So yeah, those kind of things. I didn't know the true scope of the trauma until
That experience.
that second round of therapy that the boss caused, the ex-boss.
When did you bond with your aunt, kind of over the experience of your mom?
Really, more recently in the last several years, but we've always been like where we could talk about it on an adult level. Now she does not recognize that how she was treated is trauma. Like she's like, "I don't understand," you know, and I'm like, it's trauma. And she's like, "Well, that was normal." And I'm like, "But that doesn't make it right," you know. So we've kind of had those little conversations, but we've always been pretty close, which drove my mother crazy. She absolutely, you know, went from loving her sister to hating her sister and everything in between. And then I had to be careful when my aunt was visiting. I couldn't put too much attention to her. You know, like you really got to make sure that mom is, you know, she's the bomb fixing to go off at any minute. And they were all doing it. I didn't know that, but we were all doing it. The walking on eggshells. That might be one of the very first books that I read that was like, "Oh, there's a thing." I don't know how old it is, but I remember the title, Walking on Action.
And what about your husband? Did he come from a normal, healthy family? No.
Certainly not abusive physically, but he grew up with mental illness. His mom never left the home, so his grandparents essentially raised him, and his uncle also lived there. He had type 1 diabetes and schizophrenia, so he grew
Wow.
up with a great amount of crazy. But he had what he one of the biggest things that I see that he had that I don't feel like I did is that they backed him tooth and nail. His grandmother was a fierce protector and advocate of him. And that did not happen for me. So he has a level of confidence and self-assurance that sometimes just like boggles my mind. But his family also was a group of people that we don't talk about it. So he has that. And we're both like fairly emotionally unavailable, but we recognize it, we talk about it, we work on it, and we're both only children. So being alone is like no big deal. And we worked it out where we're in a spot that what we're doing works for us.
Do you have any relationship with your stepsister?
I mean, sort of, we talk, but she's really different from me. And I just really feel like in the times that I've tried to share more recently, we're not in the same place. And so I can't, there's only so much I can do. I mean, like I got this whole ACA packet ready and I made copies and wrote this letter. And then I was like, wait a minute, that is not, I can't do that.
It's not going to go over well.
It's not going to work. Here's the you should check out the website and decide for yourself. And I left it at that, because I can't do that. So I have learned, I can't cure people or fix them, whatever, even if it would help a lot, because it'll help a lot of people. But so she lives two doors down from my parents, so
Does she?
she's a lot more close with it. But she is, I mean, I feel like as resentful as I was about each one of us, losing our parent, in the scheme of things. And so it's just weird.
Well, it sounds like you've had a whole lot of healing going on, lady.
I have.
You were able to articulate it so well.
Thank you. I've been talking about it for a long time, so.
Did the IFS process come naturally to you?
It kind of did and it kind of didn't. Before I actually went into IFS therapy, I had been listening to the IFS Live podcast. And is it James, I think? I started listening, and then like while he's talking to whoever he's interviewing, I'm like pretending like he's interviewing me. So these are my car rides to work. And I was like, okay. And I was familiar with Inner Child because of ACA. So it kind of fit in. And then after a while, like I read the Dick Schwartz book, No Bad Parts, and started looking at things. And I was like, I really think that this is something that's gonna go a long ways. And it indeed has. I mean, it's gotten me a long ways.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like it is.
So tell me three things that you like about yourself.
I like my creativity, my humor. And it's not necessarily, it's kind of nasty humor sometimes, so
That's the best kind.
inappropriate humor. And the other thing that I really like is that in all of this, through all of this, I never, ever, ever gave up on getting myself out. Like, sometimes it's been to the point of overactivity, like overreading, overlearning, overdoing, but it's like I must heal. And so that determination and drive to get to a more manageable place, I just appreciate that about myself. And it's been an up and down and a long road, but just the ability to stick to it, I would say.
Hope or dream for the future.
Serve a golden pickle in pickleball.
What does that mean where no one returns the serve?
Yeah. For the whole 11 points. That's a
Oh, for the
pipe.
whole game. Okay.
The whole game on
You
the
got a good serve?
I have a pretty good serve, I think. If you play pickleball when you start, you only get one serve, and then if you miss, it goes to the other team. And so if you get all 11 on that serve, that's the golden pickle. But then on a serious note, I want to further explore who I am, the things that I like, my preferences, and get more comfortable with expressing them, that kind of thing. And I want to write more and create more. I love writing and I love artsy stuff.
What
And
kind of writing, like creative writing?
yeah, I mean, well, I've done all this journaling my whole life, and I want to start writing about things that aren't related to my life, like other stuff. So I'm working at like a book. I got a book with prompts to kind of work with writing. I love the way the pencil feels on paper. I like it. And also a big part of me is the thing about pay it forward, like helping people that have helped me, which is a big part of your community, is we're all in different places, and hearing some of the people that have been in recovery a lot longer than I have helps me, and then I hope in turn to help other people that are new coming in and also be like an advocate for this stuff. Like, we have to talk about this. We have to. We cannot keep ignoring it. And so to be a part of that and share, and I try to do that at work, and be more honest and open about what I'm feeling and that kind of thing. Oh, it's really hard, but there it is.
Feelings.
Feelings. I don't want to adult on that today, but
I'm kidding.
But yeah, I think that's kind of it. Just be more creative and have more fun, because my gosh, I had, all those years of not having fun. So
Yeah,
to play
parenting your parent.
parenting my parent in that, the one promise from ACA that it's, or is it an affirmation, it's okay to play and have fun. That's like really digging in on that would be awesome. I'm already doing it.
All right, shit shows. Breathe to Heal is officially back, and this time we're going deeper than ever before. The theme of this third round is release and receive, releasing everything that's been stuck for way too long so you can finally receive the peace, love, and safety I know you've been craving. The 7-week healing journey goes beyond talk therapy by working directly with your nervous system using breathwork, somatic practices, and parts work to give you the kind of healing your body has been waiting for. This is all facilitated by fellow shit show member and certified somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, who's just added some fresh breathwork certifications to her toolkit. And the best part of all, this all happens right within the shit show healing community. So think of it like a healing journey where you can show up exactly as you are, like you're hanging out with your friends on the couch in your pajamas, instead of feeling like you're in some stuffy environment. So this all kicks off on Tuesday, January 13th, and early bird pricing is on through December 11th. So you, yes you, the person that's been wanting to sign up for the past two rounds but hasn't, how about we do the damn thing already, okay? Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is breathe with an E at the end. adultchildpodcast.com/BREATHE to heal to learn more and grab your damn spot.